Hello, welcome to another Loose Heads podcast in association with Talking Rugby Union. It's great that we're still producing these podcasts during this tough time at the moment. So hopefully you're all enjoying the regular podcasts that are being produced by Loose Heads and Talking Rugby Union. And as ever, I'm joined by Dave, Rob and Mark. How are we doing today, lads? We're all right?
Good, thank you.
Thanks, Chris.
Excellent. Thank you. And Dave, I believe there was another quiz on Tuesday with Hugo and Brad Shields. How was that?
It was brilliant. I think probably people enjoyed the banter between Hugo and Brad more than the quiz itself, but it kept us all entertained on a Tuesday night to the point where the feed cut out because Hugo kept going for so long. So, yeah, hopefully more of the same to come.
Yeah, I was going to say, it could have easily been a Q&A with Hugo and Brad.
Yeah, certainly felt that way. People kept the questions coming. A couple of sketchier ones, shall we say, that... were very politically avoided, but yeah, other than that, really good.
Good stuff. And Rob, I think also just to mention Hugo, I know last night or the night before you guys announced on Instagram that Hugo has become an ambassador for Loose Heads. That must be really pleasing to have someone like him on board.
Yeah, 100%. It was announced last night. He's jumped on board. He's jumped at the chance of getting involved. And yeah, we're honoured to have him on board. He's a big name, and hopefully we can do a few things together and start pushing that, you know, that big message.
Yeah, definitely. And like I said before, Hugo was joined by Brad on the Loose Heads quiz, and Brad was our last special guest on the podcast last week. And we're joined by another special guest this week. And in terms of winners, medals and honours, I think she probably beats all the guests we've had so far, and that's not any disrespect to the guys we've already had. It is Bristol Bears, England international and World Cup winner, Amber Reid. Amber, how are we doing?
Yeah, very well, thank you.
Great stuff. And we talked a little bit off air then about what you've been up to in isolation. Obviously, you've been training, but Rob pointed out to me on Twitter yesterday some of the challenges Bristol Bears women have been up to, some gymnastic stuff, Freddie Mercury tributes, if that's right.
Yeah, there have been a fair few challenges going on. So we've been put into different groups. Each week we've had to do a challenge. So it started off with week one, learn how to juggle. Then it gradually ramped up to a Rocky montage, dance routines, which is quite hard when you're trying to social distance and you can't actually see anyone. We did a bake-off. And then, yeah, the last week was a lip-sync battle. And we've put in some good efforts, I think. So hopefully it's keeping people entertained on Twitter. It's definitely entertaining us. So yeah, hopefully it makes a few people smile.
Yeah, which one have you enjoyed the most, Amber, if you had to pick one?
For me personally, I love baking. So that was a favourite. But I think the lip sync battle has the greatest entertainment factor for us and for hopefully people outside of Bristol Bears women as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And Amber, I mean, we actually spoke and did an article for Talking Rugby Union just last month when you were preparing to play Wales in the Six Nations, and we were talking about the potential of a Grand Slam and how exciting it was to be playing at the Stoop in front of such a massive crowd. So it must be quite a strange situation you as players have found yourself in over the last month or so.
Yeah, definitely. We're kind of watching it all unfold in our Six Nations. We weren't really a massive part of it. We hadn't had our Italy game yet, and obviously that's kind of the epicentre of where it was at the time. And then we were hearing about kind of Scotland and the difficulties they were having. A few other games were getting cancelled, but we were still quite away from it. So I don't think we really realised kind of how big it actually was at the time. And then obviously it came to the point where there was no way we were able to travel to Italy, and it just didn't make sense to continue the tournament. So yeah, it's definitely my most surreal Six Nations to date. And the most surreal season probably, but yeah, it's a new set of challenges that you just got to overcome, and yeah, makes you stronger in the long run.
Yeah, and I'm sure as a Red Rose team, you would like to see the Six Nations continue when it's safe to do so, to try and win another Grand Slam.
Yeah, definitely. I think everyone's kind of missing rugby at this point, just being able to get out there and throw the ball around and kind of reap the benefits of the training they're putting in. So definitely to try and go for that Grand Slam. I've had the opportunity before a couple of years ago. So to go for that again will be massive. But obviously there's bigger things at the moment to focus on, and just hoping that everyone comes through it safe and well. And then we can focus on rugby, the fun bit after that.
Yeah, you touch on the bigger picture, Amber, and I saw your tweet today about two of your teammates at Bristol Bears on the front line for the NHS, and right in saying it's Simi Hanna and Clea Fawcett. So you must be really proud of them, not only as teammates, but as friends, to see them battling this pandemic in the way they are.
Yeah, we've got another few doctors as well. So we've got Phoebe Beer, who's just come out of her final year, and Alice Middleton as well, who's been a doctor. So, yeah, definitely for us, we're really proud of them. And also some of the other girls are still working at this time to get food to the supermarkets and to stock the shelves and kind of keep it running. So, yeah, we kind of support each other on the rugby pitch, off the rugby pitch. And, yeah, we're still looking out for one another now with whatever they kind of need. We try and help them out in the best way. But, yeah, they're amazing people to be around, and amazing doctors as well doing their bit.
Yeah, absolutely, Anna, absolutely. Well, it's great to have you on the Loosehead podcast. We'll go through in the usual standard. We'll talk about your involvement with the foundation, Anna, obviously your career and winning the World Cup in 2014. And we'll finish with your all-time 15, which we said again off air was quite a lot of details gone into it, I believe.
Yeah, it took me a long time. I sat down thinking it'd be a fairly easy task, but actually I had a few debates with myself. So, yeah, looking forward to going through that one.
Great stuff. So, first of all, Amber, I mean, we touched on it last month when we spoke, that your involvement with Looseheads. And I've been right in saying, Rob, is Amber one of the newest members you've had on the team in the recent months?
Yeah, I think the newest, apart from Ugo yesterday, I think the newest ambassador on board, yeah.
And what was your main reason for approaching the guys at Looseheads, Amber?
Well, Rob kind of dropped me a message asking for a bit of exposure for Looseheads and to try and get it out there. And off the back of that, did a bit of research, had a little look, because I'd seen them pop up on my Instagram feed and Twitter feed, etc., on all the amazing things that they've been doing. So had a little bit more of a look, a bit more in depth, and was really impressed with what they've done and what all the other Looseheads ambassadors have also done as well to raise the issue of mental health and try and tackle that stigma. So for me, personally, I was coming out of a really difficult time. Over the last couple of years, I've had a few challenges. So it just felt right to want to help out and kind of ask Rob if I could be a part of it, be an ambassador, because it's something that's really close to me and something that I've really struggled with. So to help other people in a similar situation, I'm really passionate about.
You talk about the injuries, Amber. I know we've spoken about it, that how tough of a period that was for you. And you said that it was you didn't realise the importance of speaking about your mental health. So was that another drive for you, that you wanted to encourage more people to come out and talk about the struggles?
I've been rubbish growing up at talking to people. I've always felt that I've never really wanted to offload my burden onto someone else because it's, I didn't feel like it was right. If I'm struggling with it, I don't also want to make someone else have to deal with that as well. So all through growing up, just try to deal with it, try to be okay. And then gradually injuries start to chip away. And when you can't do something that you really want to do, it's really difficult. So, it's something that I've really struggled with. But to help other people in a similar situation, because it happens to all of us. It might not be injuries through rugby, but lots of little things happen in life that stop us doing the things we love. To get on board and to help people in a similar situation, I really wanted to do.
Yeah, I mean, what advice would you give Amber? Because, you know, you've come through these injuries now. Obviously, you were really enjoying your rugby again before the situation we find ourselves in. But what kind of first steps would you take to someone who might be coming out of a tough period? And is it just as simple as talking to someone about it initially?
Yeah, it sounds like a bit of a cliche, but firstly, you have to admit you're struggling. One to yourself, but also to other people. I was really lucky. Ex-Bristol teammate Claire Malloy was still really close. She's also a doctor. But she kind of forced me, because I was talking to her, and then she forced me to seek other help and go speak to some other people, which I was very reluctant to do. But she kind of pushed me and forced me to do that. Yeah, definitely admit that you're struggling yourself, but talking to other people, because then they help you see the bigger picture, and kind of you can then remove yourself from the situation a little bit and see it a bit more objectively rather than with all that emotion attached to it as well.
And Mark, it must be great to listen to Amber speak about that and have Amber on board, because, you know, rugby is seen as, you know, using the phrase, a macho sport, but to have females coming out and talking about it as well, it must be great because they can connect with everyone who's involved with the game.
Absolutely. And my background in rugby, playing wise, obviously, was all with my mates. But I met my wife at a rugby club. She was captain of Staines Ladies. She was playing standoff. I will always call it standoff and never fly half. I was like any self-respecting seven. I chased her as hard as I could. And eventually she agreed to go out with me, and the rest is history. And we've three kids later in 25 years and a few houses and all that. And then I had the privilege when we moved up to the Northwest. They lost their coach at Manchester Ladies. And some misguided member of the team asked me to coach for a couple of years. And I'd always played rugby because it was the thing to do. I was brought up in a rugby league playing town. If you didn't play rugby, you were considered very suspect. The girls I met at Manchester Ladies were all massive mates. And I hadn't really connected the dots until probably the last couple of years that I played rugby because I wanted to play rugby with my mates. These girls at Manchester had a bigger bond than that. They relied on each other. I make no bones about, I don't draw any pleasure from saying this, but I know that my playing rugby for 25, 30 years fooled a lot of people over that time. It treated my mental health. And I think the very same is true, but more so for the women's game. They eventually found me out as a coach and kicked me out and got a proper and then Sharon got pregnant, and the result of that pregnancy is Robert. So rugby's got an awful lot to answer for, certainly women's rugby in my house.
Yeah, and Dave, you know, we're looking at the growth of the women's game at the moment. It seems to be going every single month. It's improving and improving. So to have someone on board who is Amber Statue, who's been there, won it, it must be really pleasing as well.
Yeah, it's been incredibly humbling for us to have somebody of Amber's stature kind of want to get involved and show our support for what we're doing.
Definitely. Well, Amber, it's great. I mean, on the behalf of the lads as well, I'm sure they'll agree. It's great to have you on board with the Loose Heads team, and you're doing great work. The guys are doing great work. So it's really pleasing. I mean, if we can go on to sort of your rugby career now, and you've done it all really in terms of representing your country, and you've been brilliant at club level as well. But when you first started out playing, Amber, what was the main drive for you to get involved in rugby?
New challenge was probably the first thing. I grew up playing football and then kind of got a bit bored of it, really. There wasn't really, thinking back now, if you go to a rugby club at the weekend, everyone stays around. And when I went up to watch my brother, we were pretty much there for the entire day. So he play their game, and then the parents sit around in the bar, the kids go out and run around, play outside or whatever. But thinking back to football days, you turned up at the pitch, the goalpost got put up, you played your game, you got back in the car and you went home. There wasn't really that social element around it. So kind of got a bit bored of playing rugby and then looking for a new challenge. And I was really lucky that one of the teachers at my school has started a girls' rugby club the year before, purely for the fact that the boys are really good and the girls wanted a piece of that as well, and to show everyone that girls could be just as good. So, just started there with my mates. It was another opportunity to do sport at school, to fill up my time, lunchtimes, break times, whatever it was. That's kind of how I got into rugby. And then when I left school at 18, looked for my closest rugby club, and that was Bristol.
Yeah, I mean, right in saying as well, Amber, did your uncle, obviously, did he play for Scotland and the Lions as well? Is that right? Or
Yes, he got capped for Scotland, I think, 19 times, and also played for the Lions. So I think when I was younger, I went to watch him. So played for Wasps, played for Bath, played for Chiefs as well. So I can remember watching one game at the Chiefs ground when they still had the track around the outside, and to watch him play. But I think the biggest influence, because he lives so far away, but most of my family are down in Cornwall, that the biggest influence has been the support of my mum taking me to football, taking me to rugby, washing my kit. My dad and my brother both played at the local rugby club. So going up to watch them, they're probably bigger influences on my decision to play rugby, and my continued support in it. But it is cool to have an uncle who's also been through the same thing, and we do speak about it, and he does give me support along the way as well.
And you mentioned the enjoyment factor there, Amber, and I know you were at Exeter University as well. Did you ever realise at that point that you could potentially make a career out of it?
I had no idea that I could make a career out of it back at uni. So just work hard, get my degree, and do rugby. One of the top tips that when you go to schools or people ask you, like, what are your top tips? And my first one is enjoy it. Because if you enjoy something, you'll work harder, no matter what that is, if it's sport, if it's your job, if it's a hobby you do. If you enjoy something, you'll put in more work to get better at it. So that's like my number one tip. So got capped for the 20s just before I went into uni, and then got my first senior cap at the time. And then that's where I realised that I could play international rugby, not necessarily the career part of it, but playing at the top level. And just wanted to keep on doing it, really.
Because on Talking Rugby Union, we cover a lot of university rugby, and I know Exeter have been brilliant over the last couple of years or so. So is it pleasing for you to see, Amber, that the uni programme is getting better and better, so these girls can enjoy rugby but also get a degree out of it, and there is now that possible pathway of going into the professional game?
Yeah, it's really important that education is still valued, whether that's at university or apprenticeships or courses, because rugby is that game that it comes with its risks. It's part of the sign up when you cross the whitewash. It's a contact game, and you don't want to shy away from that. So for any young person growing up, it's awesome that it's now the potential to be a career, be that men's or women's, but also you still need to focus on your own personal development. Just if something does happen, at least you've got something there that you can fall back on. And that also helps with the whole stress of injuries and bits and pieces. You know, you've got that backup plan if it's required.
Yeah, Rob, it must be great to hear Amber say that, because when we spoke to, I think Guy Thompson said it's all about having that fallback plan, going through the education system and getting those learning qualities and that degree. So it's great to have someone on board who echoes up that viewpoint.
Yeah, we speak quite a lot about, we mentioned it on the Guy Thompson podcast, that quite a lot of rugby players get to sort of 32, 33, 34 and they don't really realise what they've got next. Or they haven't really prepared. So it's all about that preparation, and you know, rugby's a game where, like Amber says, you know, you cross the whitewash and cross the white line, and you might get injured. So you've always got to have a fallback option. You've always got to have a plan B with rugby. So you know, it's great to hear, you know, Guy Thompson and Amber Reid talk about, you know, the fact that you've got to prepare for life after.
But I know the studies would have been a main priority for you, Amber, when you were at university. But to get that senior cap and playing for England, that must have been some occasion. I mean, can you still remember that debut? What were your thoughts going through your mind when you were preparing to start that game?
I think I was quite stressed. it's almost like a thank you, like, yes, I've made it. And everything that all my family, all the friends have put into me to help me get to this point has all been worth it. But it was a cold, wet, windy night against France at Isha. Not the best conditions. And the fly half turns to me and said, my ankle's a bit dodgy. I think you're going to need to kick. So stress levels went right through the roof. But it was just about doing the job and putting in a good performance, because you get your first cap, but you don't want to be, that's it. You want to put in a good performance to then hopefully go on to get more. So yeah, it was enjoy it, and I had the support of my family there, so it was really nice to see, like, my nan in the crowd and have photos with her after and bits and pieces. So yeah, stress was the first thing, and then that relief and that enjoyment after.
Yeah, and we spoke in March, Amber. I think we talked about that weight that you had between your 49th and your 50th cap for the Red Roses, and you said, oh, it was massively frustrating. But do you still get nervous going into a big game? Because, you know, you've represented your country so many times, but do you still get that same sort of feeling you did when you first stepped out against France?
I get nervous all the time, even stepping out for Bristol at the weekend, speaking in front of people, just like a bit of anxiety. But I think it keeps you on your toes. That nervousness, as long as you know how to control it, it's okay. As long as it doesn't dictate how your first involvement's in a game, if you're too nervous, you drop the ball or don't hit the kick right, that's it. All adds to the adrenaline, which helps you play a little bit better and keeps you concentrating. If I'm not nervous, that's when it makes me a little bit twitchy. Yeah, a bit of nerves are okay.
In terms of sort of the way the women's game's gone now, especially in the England setup, I mean, you used the term keeping you on your toes there, Amber. So because of the way England have gone and the success they've had over the 16 months, are you always now on your toes because it seems every game is a big stepping stone for England moving forward?
I think it's exciting now because you can step out onto the pitch and you genuinely don't know. Obviously, no one's ever got the right to win the game before the final whistle. But where the gulf in international rugby has been so great, that has sometimes been the case. So now the level, the international level across the world is going through the roof. So each game you step out, you know you're going to have to put in your best performance to come out on the right side on the scoreboard, which again adds to that pressure. So you need to make sure that you're working really hard in between games, but you're also preparing for that game because it could go either way, which is testament to the unions and how much, and the players, how much they're actually putting into to what's going on, and the gap's closing all the time.
Yeah, we're in this sort of exciting new era for the Red Roses now, but rewind the clock back 6 years ago, Amber, and it seems that you guys may have kicked off the legacy and really put England's women's rugby on the map, if you like, with that World Cup win. I mean, what are your memories from that day? It's obviously such a special moment in your career.
Yeah, it's a bit surreal. After the final whistle, a lot of the girls from that team had been through the heartache of 2010, obviously the home World Cup in England, got to the final, and a lot of them felt like it was their time. They felt like they'd done everything that they needed to do to go out on that pitch against their rivals, New Zealand, who'd beat them in 2006 as well. So, yeah, they felt like it was their time. And off the back of that, obviously, the pressure of the home World Cup and not making it, it was really special to see those girls in that moment, everything they've worked so hard for over their career, to see them achieve it, because there's some incredible people that I've had the privilege of playing with, some really talented girls. So, yeah, to see the reward for all their hard work was really special, and to be out on the pitch with them as well.
Amber, this week, one of my other great loves in life, I sort of gave it up to play rugby, but it's cricket. And this week, I caught a Lancashire cricket podcast where they introduced a World Cup winner, not dissimilar to yourself. And that World Cup winner was Will Greenwood, who described the week of the World Cup leading up to the World Cup final in 2003. And he said, remarkably, he said, Tuesday, Wednesday, we'll beat anyone. Just let them turn up, we'll beat anyone. And suddenly, Thursday, Friday, oh my God, we've got a game to play here. And you spoke about the, very authentically, about suddenly your own misgivings and your shortcomings and your weaknesses become the only thing you can see. And then he did this beautiful thing where game's on a Saturday, 6 o'clock, 8 o'clock kickoff. So you wake up at 10, what are you going to do with yourself? And then you look around your changing rooms, and he described, you got Phil Vickery, you got Martin Johnson, you got Neil Back, you got Richard Hill, you got Lawrence Dallaglio, you got a star-studded backline. We're not losing this game ever. So he went from, we're never going to lose, to, oh my God, we're going to lose, we're rubbish, to, we can't lose. Did you go, what was your week? What was your World Cup winning week like?
So our schedule is quite tough because there's only like a 4-day, we play every fourth day. So there was a gap between the initial group stages, and then we changed venue. So we moved from Dublin to Belfast. So we played our semi-final against France. And the weird thing about ours is I don't know what happens with the men, but if you're the top seed from the last World Cup, you get to pick where you want to stay. So you get first choice, second get second choice, etc. So we chose a hotel in the middle of Belfast because it was quite nice to go out. You could still go to coffee shops. Wasn't too far to travel from training and bits and pieces. not only did we choose this hotel, but the New Zealanders and the French also chose this hotel and the Italians. So you've got four teams, two of which we played. We played France in the semi-final and we played New Zealand in the final. So you go into breakfast in the morning, press the lift, lift doors open. There's like two French girls in the lift and you're playing each other in the afternoon. This is ridiculous. So you're trying to make small talk with the language barrier. Just end up ignoring each other all the way down to the bottom and then get out and go your separate ways. But yeah, for us, other than trying to avoid the opposition in the hotel, I think we felt like we were in quite a good place. But it's probably quite similar. You go through the doubts that, have you done this? Should you have done that? We were off quite a high off the back of the French game. We put in a really good performance in the semi-final. And then, yeah, it was just almost getting over that barrier. Like, it's New Zealand in the final. A lot of girls, again, the same as 2014. It was a Canadian, like Canada in the final. So it's England, Canada, whereas everyone expected it to be England, New Zealand. So it was a completely different mindset. So a lot of the girls were going back to 2010 and still probably replaying that game and going into this one. But again, I think we kind of felt like it was our time. We'd done the best we can to prepare. We just needed to put it out on the pitch. Mm. Yeah, so.
Just indulge me a little in that spirit of when you win on the biggest stage. Does there come a moment, I've never won on a bigger stage, so just indulge me. Is there a moment when you look round and the result's kind of there, bar the shouting, and you look round and time freezes?
The final was definitely like that. 2014, after the whistle had gone and we were all stood lining up to get our medals, I was kind of having that outer body experience. I was stood there looking around at all the people still left in the stadium and looking at my teammates, but it didn't feel real. It didn't feel like I was actually there. It felt like I was just watching it as a spectator. Yeah. Whereas,
I bet it's a place you didn't want to leave, having won.
Could have stayed on that pitch, yeah, for a long, long time. Yeah. Whereas 2017 was the opposite. Again, same outer body experience, but you're replaying the whole game in your head. Like, what could I have done? What could I have changed? You've got the team who have won quite rightly celebrating because you'd be in exactly the same situation. So they're within earshot, probably 20, 30 metres away. And you're there and you can't do anything about it. So you're, yeah, just replaying what you could have done differently. So,
yeah.
Yeah, experiencing both is very different. So it's almost like the same feeling, but completely different emotions.
Yeah, I believe World Rugby is showing that game on YouTube tonight. I don't know if you're aware of that.
Yeah, it's on tonight.
Is that going to be watched, is it?
I think I might have a watch, yeah.
Maybe, just the highlights.
See that Tamara Taylor dummy again.
And at that time, Amber, you know, when the celebrations had died down, did you think as a team and as a union that you could really try and build a legacy moving forward?
I think testament has to also go to the French Rugby Union because the venue for the knockout games and the games before the stage games beforehand were incredible. They had loads of support. They'd sold loads of tickets. The buzz around the World Cup, it was completely different. I know in 2010 they got more spectators than expected, but it just felt like, and from speaking to those girls, another step on in France. And for the semis and the finals to have that many tickets sold, I think it like made records than before, and the atmosphere really escalated the level of women's rugby. Which is amazing. So going on from that, this is the appetite for it. This is what could happen. And then for us, it was then building on that legacy of 2014. What can we do next? And how do we grow the game over in England? Because the appetite's there. The French have shown it. What do we now need to do over here to emulate that success as well?
And obviously last January was a major step forward for England women's rugby with the the introduction of full-time contracts for Red Roses players. I mean, how important do you think that statement was by the RFU?
It's a massive statement because it allows players to be the best they can be. It's almost like a catch-22. You want to put out a really good product, but if you can't invest in it, it's not going to be as good as what you want it to be. So really investing in the time of the players to put in the extra work, to do the extra skills, then elevates the game. So more people can watch it, so more money comes in, etc. But also, if more people can invest time into getting better themselves, and then you get more time to pull all those better quality individuals together as a team, it's really going to drive the success of your international team. So, yeah, it was a massive stepping stone and a massive statement to the rest of the world. This is what we're going to do and we're going to commit to it. And we're starting to see the benefits of that programme now, having been in it for a while.
And I know in terms of yourself, Amber, you know, you had to wait till September because of the injuries that you've been through. And you talk about sort of that tough period it was for you when you were going through your injury. So when this news was developing, was that kind of a thing for you to that try and drive yourself on to get back to your fitness first and foremost at club level and then take it forward for England?
I think for me at the time, with my back, it was a potential... Well, the first consultant I said, you probably need to retire. I didn't like that opinion very much. I found a second one, luckily. So for me at that point, it was just about getting back to being able to do physical activity, being able to play rugby, and then using the stepping stones onto there. So to have the opportunity to have it as a career as well. Obviously, we'd been through the stint leading up to the 2017 World Cup, had the experience, kind of knew what it was going to be like. So it was another driving factor. But for me, I want to play international rugby. And to do that, you have to be full-time contracted. So that's kind of how my thought process works. Rather than to do it as a job, I want to play international rugby and kind of work backwards from there. Yeah, because ultimately that's what I want to do at the end of the day, play for my country.
Yeah, and I mean, the Six Nations just gone, Amber, saw you really get back into the squad. And I mean, it seems like a great time to have done so. We mentioned before about the Wales game. You know, you're seeing these crowds grow and grow. And I think it was 11,000 that were at the Stoop that day. So how much does that fill you with pride that, you know, from when you did make your debut against France at Esher to now filling out, you know, a big crowd at the Stoop? It must be really pleasing and make you feel very proud to represent your country.
Yeah, the noise on the pitch is incredible. You can't hear it all the time, but it's that those little moments, that big hit that someone does or that run, that try, then you can kind of hear the atmosphere and the noise really build. But it's also great to have the opportunity to go and see friends and family or fans at the end of the game and see the next generation of rugby players coming through, which is, yeah, exciting as well to see that rather than just a few of your friends and family and one man and his dog, which was the case at my first cup.
I mean, we talk about sort of the growth of the game in terms of a player's point of view, but you said there it's great to connect with the fans after the game and speak to these young girls who are coming down. So that must be a major part of it as well, not just developing players for the future.
I know when I was growing up, there wasn't enough women's rugby in the media. And when I first joined Bristol, I probably didn't know, we had lots of internationals, but I probably didn't know who a lot of them were, which is quite bad to say. But I think now, because it's there in the media a bit more, it's almost like the young boys and girls growing up can put a name to the face when they speak to you or ask for a selfie or ask for an autograph. They know who you are. So it's nice to be able to connect and obviously as role models, to meet your role model is really special and quite inspirational. So that's what we're trying to do as well, to thank them for coming to support us, but also try and spur them on to be in that position potentially in 10, 15 years' time.
Was it working at Bristol Sport as well, where I work closely with the women's teams, you know, Bristol Bears being one of those, Bristol City women as well. But the coverage that women in sport is, you know, getting now is huge. The brands that want to be aligned with those women's teams as well is ever growing. So, yeah, an exciting time for women in sport.
Because I was going to say, Rob, obviously you work with Bristol than we've seen recently with Sale Sharks and Exeter introducing teams to the Tyrrells Premiership, whatever that may be next season. Two professional clubs at the top of the game in the Premiership, really pulling the weight right behind these Tyrrells Premiership sides. So do you get a sense, Rob, when you work for Bristol, that everybody's on the same page? It is that family feel at Bristol Bears at the moment?
I think so, yeah. I think, you know, you'll see a lot more of the Premiership teams as well, sort of, you know, introduce that women's team as well, because, you know, the women's rugby game is really growing at the moment. You know, like I said, I work in the commercial team. So, you know, the brands that want to get involved and want to align themselves with women's rugby is ever growing.
Is that important to see as well, Amber, that, you know, you are seeing these Premiership clubs that are growing themselves? You know, we've seen Bristol develop so well over the last few years in the men's game, but Sale and Exeter coming into the league, that they are getting this full support and these shared resources from the men's game into the women's game. Because at the end of the day, like I said before, it's all about developing the next generation of players. And if you do have that massive support behind you, it's only going to be a plus point.
The more resources we can share between top level men's clubs and women's clubs, the better the resources are going to be for both parties. To share the coaching facilities, etc., that we do with Bears is massive for us and allows us to then put more into players and have more access for players. At the moment, we don't have the revenue as like equal to the men's. We're nowhere near it at the moment. But this is kind of a stepping stone into creating that professional element without having the cost implications that don't allow you to do so. So it's a really good bridge, and Bristol Bears are amazing for us and really support us and they help us develop. So it's great to see that grow over the last couple of seasons, but also with the new men's Premier clubs coming on board, Sale, Exeter, who are now interested, and a couple of years ago they weren't. But even Falcons were interested in putting a side in. Yeah, it's really great to see that it's not just in one area as well, that it's more accessible to boys and girls all over the country.
Amber, how much do you work with, I should probably know this, but how much do you work with Pat and the Bears boys?
So we've had a couple of them come in and do a few position-specific skill sessions. And also we've been into Clifton on a couple of the Tuesdays, sat in their meetings and got to chat to them. But I've seen Pat more last year. His children both go to Colston. So, yeah, see him on the side of a netball court supporting his daughter in bits and pieces. So, yeah, seeing him in that capacity. But there is quite a big crossover. I know Kim, our head coach, speaks to Pat and their coaches just for a few ideas and to see what's going on with the men. So there's a bit of crossover in how we want to play, which is also exciting as well.
And Mark, obviously we're in the Northwest, and you know we've got a little bit of an affiliation with Sale Sharks. So as a rugby fan, it must be brilliant to see sort of a Northwest club echo what Amber's just said there, that they are putting those shared resources into it, and you know it is growing the game in this region as well.
Yeah, I think Rob obviously works at Bristol Bears, and I'm fairly closely affiliated to Sale up here. But I think what Bristol Bears are doing, putting three sports under one big roof and umbrella and doing it for the whole region, that's got to be the way forward. I don't think anyone can exist in splendid isolation anymore. Certainly Sale have recognised that.
Yeah, definitely. And like I said before, Amber, it's sort of all of this helps create a better England team, which we all hope to see over the next few years. And obviously the World Cup is hopefully going to be next year. I know there's a story today about the World Cup and the Olympics maybe overlapping, but we won't ask you about the politics behind that. It's more so how much of a drive is there from the England camp that you were in, that all focus is now hopefully going to be on the World Cup, because the strides that the team has made has been unbelievable over the last sort of 16 months.
Yeah, it's that thing that you still get major competitions that happen year in, year out. Obviously, the Six Nations we go into, we want to win. The summer tours we go into, we want to win. But ultimately, they're stepping stones building towards the four-year cycle, which is the World Cup. Obviously, off the back of 2017, got to the final, really good game, but we just came up short against a very good New Zealand side. So for us, it'll be putting in a good performance at the World Cup and putting ourselves in a good position, hopefully, to be in that place again. and put things right from last time. But obviously, we've got to make sure that we do the little bits along the way to be in the right place as a squad and as individuals. So that's our focus at the moment going towards the new season. And then whenever that starts, all eyes will be focused on how do we get into a good place for Six Nations. Because I think we need to get things right by then and then fine-tune things. But I think you can't really come out the back of Six Nations with too much to do because you won't have enough time.
Yeah, and just finally on the England stuff, Amber, you were very diplomatic last time I asked you this question. So you might say the same thing again, but I asked you whether a third World Cup was going to be on the horizon. Have you had any more thoughts about that? Same answer.
Same answer. Yeah, I think my injury record hazes things a little bit. So for me, it'll just be staying on the pitch. And if I can do that, then hopefully I'll be in a good place to get selected for the World Cup. But yeah, my main focus is to play rugby because that'll get me there.
Good answer. Good answer. And you obviously played with a number of great players in your career, Amber, in the England squad, and you know the game really well. And I think it's time for the main part of the podcast now, which is the all-time 15. And I mean, this could probably be a half an hour, 45-minute episode alone, Mark, by the sounds of things.
Yeah, so here's the premise. The Martians have landed. They've got some troubles back on Mars, so they've challenged Earth to a game of rugby to decide the future of civilization. The game will be played on Mars because we've lost the toss. The shuttle leaves tomorrow, Saturday. It takes 4 weeks to get to Mars. So your job is simply to pick a team to win a game. But it's a bit more than that because it's a four-week tour. If you win, when you win, there'll be a few drinks to be had. There's going to be a long time spent with the 22 in total. So it's a full 15. I've only given you three subs and then a water boy, a manager, a kit man and a coach. And you can pick anybody you like. The bonkers situation that we're in at the moment with COVID-19 calls for bonkers solutions. This has to be a bonkers 15.
Right. This was tough. Like I said earlier, I went backwards and forwards with a few of these. So there's quite a few of my teammates because I know what quality players they are. So started off with a really strong front row. I've gone the legend that is Rocky Clark, both for Barber, so you know it's gonna be good fun. And also England's or the Red Roses top, well, England's most capped ever player. Gone Keith Wood, Irish hooker, and then I've got my housemate, Sarah Byrne, that tight head, because she's an unbelievable carrier. She's good fun off the pitch and devastating on it as well. So, yeah, pretty powerful front row, I reckon.
Keith Wood will be honoured.
Had to go with Jono, Martin Johnson in the second row. One, leadership qualities, but again, he's been a Barber, he's been on a Lions tour, so you know he's in it for the long run. Can have a bit of a laugh. He'll keep people in check. Zoe Aldcroft is another current England player. Again, great fun at the end of a tour, but also the work rate that she puts on the pitch is phenomenal. And she just keeps going and keeps going. She just keeps getting better, and she's still only a youngster. So yeah, they're my engines in the second row. Back row was tough. I've known some quality back rowers, both played with them. Maggie Alfonsi just missed out. But yeah, I've gone Claire Malloy at six rather than her usual position at seven. Ireland international, again, played for Barbars. So good fun. George Smith, Aussie legend. Yeah. Also played for the Bristol Bears, so he's actually come in and done a coaching session with us and like hanging on his every word. Unbelievable knowledge. So yeah, he'd devastate the Martians and we definitely get a bit of ball back from there to play with.
Is future rugby having two sevens in the back row? Because I think pretty much everyone who's chosen a 15 for us on this has chosen two sevens on the flanks.
I don't know if they just stick in your mind a little bit more potentially, because they're the ones that the sevens get the glory most of the time. So,
I think you could have a whole podcast devoted to the back row.
Definitely, 100%. Takes a special breed to be in the back row, I reckon. And then I've gone mystical Pat Lam at the back of the scrum. One, you need an enforcer to keep everyone in check. You need your team culture right if you're going to be on a spaceship for 4 weeks. And an unbelievable player as well. So I've got him in at number eight. Because I debated whether to put him in as coach. And I was like, no, we're going to put him in the pitch. Going to be a pack leader, captain. Yeah, number eight. Number nine, I had a last minute change. So I've gone for Joe Yap, who was my university coach at Exeter. I'm very fortunate to have such a quality coach for a university side, and definitely learnt a lot there. So she had 70 caps for England, but she's touted by quite a lot of the England players and some of the old girls as one of the best nines that they've ever played with, both for like delivery and also for like knowledge of the game. Just inside and out. I've gone with my current England teammate at fly half or standoff, Katie Daly McLean.
Quite right. We'll stay with standoff.
She's probably one of the players I've learnt the most from over my career. Just her knowledge of the game, her kicking ability, her tactical awareness is definitely needed. So much so that she pushed my idol and the great Johnny Wilkinson into a sub position. She definitely made the cut as the starting standoff. And then had to have Jonah Lomu on the wing. Absolutely devastating. Yeah. And his highlights reel and the try that he scored against England, just round people, bowling people over. He kind of had the speed, the step, and the brute force to drive people over. And then I've gone Lydia Thompson on the other wing. One of the best wingers that I've ever played with. Absolutely rapid. Not so much of a stepper, but if you give her an inch, she's gone. And scored an unbelievable try in the 2017 final against New Zealand. They made the mistake of putting a kick in. Lydia catches it on the fall and kind of outpaces them. So, she makes it onto the other wing. And then centres-wise, Brian O'Driscoll, absolutely magic player. Love watching him growing up, both for Leinster and also for Ireland and the Lions as well. And I think he'd make a pretty decent partnership with Skaz, Emily Scarrett, current England player. So push Brian O'Driscoll into 12, Skaz at 13. I think they'd be pretty magic centre partnership in there. And then the dancing feet of Nonny Waterman in at 15. Again, she'd been on tour with the Barbars, so she'd be a great laugh. And having tried to chase her to be in a support line to get an offload, one, she's never going to give the pass anyway. But to try and keep up with her is, too tough. just let her go, jinx side to side, and kind of trail in a straight line behind her is the best way to go. That's my starting 15. Schalk Brits, lovely player to watch. It's crazy that he's only got 15 caps for South Africa, but I think just devastated people in the Prem when he played for Saris. Just good fun, and I think he can play anywhere. Well, he's played hooker, but also played in the back row. Yeah. It's my three substitutes. Had to pick someone who could play in a few positions. So, he's going to be my utility forward. My rugby hero, Johnny Wilkinson, like I said before, has been pushed to the bench. But in the event that we need a last-minute drop goal to beat the Martians, I know who I'm going to call on for my sub. and for his devastating running, Serge Blanco, French player, I think he'd be able to mix it up either on the wing or at 15 to cause a bit of mayhem back there as well.
Just before we leave the players and go to the management, so to speak, answering Dave's question earlier about is the future of rugby two sevens, your back line dictates there has to be two sevens, I think. Is that good?
Yeah, I think we need two sevens to keep up with the pacing with the back three, definitely.
Yeah.
Get to secure the ball so we can keep playing. But it's a really interesting point about the two sevens. And I think in the English game, we're trying to work out who's not a six and a half and who's an actual seven. But yeah. I think the balance of the back row is very important to any pack, for sure. Yeah. I think I'd like to have a go in the back row one day. Not have to think about anything else, just be able to chase the ball and hit things. It'd be quite nice.
Amber, do you subscribe to the picking Shelt Bricks at 16, so to speak? He epitomises that belief I personally have, that just get your best players on the pitch, doesn't matter where.
Yeah.
And you can sacrifice a little bit of the odd throw into the lineup that goes not quite well for the utter ridiculousness that he offers everywhere else.
I think if you look at the time, it's almost like when you're coaching, you don't want to spend too much time on your first save moves or your set pieces. Obviously, they're really important to try and keep the ball back, more so for forwards. But as backwise, if you constantly work on your first phase set piece moves, the amount of times that happens in a game compared to open play or counter-attack is so minimal.
Yeah.
That actually just being able to play heads up and play from there is more important. So, yeah, definitely having your best players on the pitch who understand the game and how the team play.
Yeah.
But I think he's, yeah, massively underrated as to what he offers.
And it becomes tedious. Watching rugby by numbers becomes ultimately tedious.
I think the way the modern game's gone now, you look at the Carl Sinclair, for example, just the skills that he has, or any of the All Blacks in the front row, they're not your traditional front row players that are just there to push or lift in the line out. They've got the quality to put in a step. Elish Genge made that massive break at the World Cup down the left hand touchline.
Yeah.
And for a front row forward, a prop to do that shows where the game's become or where the game's coming. You can't just be a good scrummager. You have to be able to scrummage and get the ball back, but be devastating around the park as well.
So who's going to look after your 18? Who's your coach, your water boy, etc.?
Right, I've gone for myself as water girl, because, yeah, World Cup final, I was the water girl in that game. So a World Cup winning water girl needs to be on there. And also, I want to be on a spaceship with all these legends. So, yeah, I had to pick myself. Manager, we had an England manager a few years ago and for the 2014 World Cup, Jan Mann. She was an absolute legend. Even the carnage that some of the girls caused on the last night and bits and pieces, she'd be like very stern. You need to sort yourself out. You need to get this done. But, she always had your back in any eventuality as well. So she'd definitely be on there keeping everyone in check. Kit manager. I've gone for a rogue choice. I've gone for Daisy May Cooper, who is the star of this country. Brilliant programme. But on the premise that she's always in kit. It might be football kit rather than rugby kit. But she's always in kit. And she's just hilarious. So, yeah, I definitely want her. She has been to watch a few of our... she came to watch England Wales a few years ago. And we packed down in the scrum. So me, ex-Bristol teammate Izzy Noel-Smith, who was playing at the time as well. I think her cousin films on this country, so got Daisy May along, and yeah, there's a picture of the three of us in like the front row of a scrum, which is quite funny. And then for my coach, for his long-term planning, the CEO of Amazon, so Jeff Bezos,
Yeah.
Also for the fact that if you're going to be away for 4 weeks and you're going to win and you're going to have a party after, Amazon stock everything. So you know that you're going to have all your supplies for your 4 week trip and you can have a few beers or gins or whatever you want after as well, because that man can supply it. So he's got a long-term plan to win the game, but also he's got everything that you need as well for your trip.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
Oh, you weren't wrong when you said it was a lot of thought gone into that one, Amber. There is a good reason why everyone's in that team as well.
Yeah, I was trying to work it out, but no, I'm pretty happy with the squad.
Well, I think that's probably it for the Loosehead podcast this week. Amber, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Thanks very much for coming on the pod.
Thanks for having me. It's been really good.
Great stuff. And as always, to Rob, Mark and Dave, cheers for your time, guys.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks, Amber.
Thanks, Amber.
Thank you. And that has been another Loosehead's podcast in association with Talking Rugby Union. Thanks very much for listening.